Whether it's her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct has everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
Hello, sunshine.
Hey, besties. Today on The Bright Side, we're paying our respects to a concept that has weighed heavily on us, the girl boss. May she rest in peace. Author and cultural critic Lee Stein joins us to talk about the rise and eventual downfall of the girl boss. And we look ahead to the future of women in the workplace.
I think girl boss, the movement, became synonymous with millennial hustle culture. And I think one of the things that would come to harm the girl boss in the end was that we had the idea that if the girl slash woman was running the company, it would be different than when the boys ran the company.
It's Thursday, April 11th. I'm Danielle Robay.
And I'm Simone Boyce, and this is The Bright Side from Hello Sunshine. Okay, so today we're trying something a little bit new, and I'll tell you why. So I've been feeling for a long time that we need to properly memorialize the girl boss because she is an icon, a legend, but she was ever present if you were a millennial working woman between 2014 to, let's say, 2020, right?
Yeah. So I think that we're going to get into what the girl boss is, was, how it impacted our lives and society. But I really want to hear about how the girl boss impacted you personally first. Did you feel connected to her, Simone?
I felt so connected to the girl boss. I mean, I was hashtagging hustle quotes on Instagram, Danielle. I was rocking the pantsuits. I mean, I probably had girl boss merch. It just made me feel like I was a part of something, like I was linked to all the other ambitious young women in my age who are climbing, who are building. I mean, I was in New York City at the time whenever the girl boss really exploded. So it just felt like this movement that I wanted to be a part of. And then, of course, it all came crashing down and I have a very complex relationship with it now. What do you think of when you think of the girl boss?
I think of the aesthetic. So much. Yeah. I think of the millennial pink and the 12 different textures of millennial pink. And I think of Beyonce because there was that quote that was going around the internet that said, you have the same amount of hours in the day as Beyonce. And I think that idea exemplified the girl boss so well, which was like, hustle hard, do the most, don't sleep. And it was all kind of unrealistic. But I think that the girl boss, for all of her wrongdoings, actually set us up for a better place at work and in work culture for women as a whole. And so I'm really excited to unpack all of it with you.
We have decided that we need to have a proper memorial for the girl boss. I need some closure. I wonder if some of our Bright Side besties might benefit from some closure too. So we're going to be laying her to rest with an expert and also a couple of eulogies from yours truly.
Mm-hmm. I think, can we call it a funeral? I think we're having a funeral for the girl boss.
We are.
May she rest in peace.
But first, here's what's popping on our feeds today. This is your morning drip, y'all.
Okay, we got to kick it off with a huge win for women in sports because for the first time ever, more people watched the women's NCAA championship game than the men's game. We need a sound effect. We need a blow horn. Did you just do that with your mouth?
Yeah. Yeah.
That was incredible. You're so talented. I'm so excited by this because it wasn't just by a little. It was by a lot. According to Nielsen, which is like the ratings for television, 18.9 million viewers tuned in to watch South Carolina take on Iowa Sunday afternoon, which was the women's game, compared to 14.8 million people who watched the men's championship Monday night. So I'm not an expert in math, but that's like a 4 million person difference, I think.
I think you're great at math because you're absolutely right. I mean, we are living in history right now. This is so cool.
Also, everybody was talking about how the women's college basketball games were way more fun to watch this year than the men's. And that's for a lot of reasons. Like, part of it is that a lot of the men are going to play pro earlier. And so it feels kind of like B-League to watch the men's right now. And the women are just so dominant. And I'm excited to see some of the stars that come out of the women's basketball movement and moment right now.
I think you're absolutely right. Okay, taking a hard left turn here. Danielle, I know you're a fan. You said your favorite movie is First Wives Club, right?
Oh, yeah. I will watch any rom-com 30 times over.
Okay, so Bridget Jones, where do you stand on that?
Huge fan. See, I watch them all on airplanes all the time. Did you watch Bridget Jones?
I did. Such fond memories. And more good memories are coming because she is back, y'all. We've just learned that Renee Zellweger, Emma Thompson, and Hugh Grant are going to reprise their roles for a fourth Bridget Jones movie. And it's going to be called Bridget Jones, Mad About the Boy.
We have to say that in a British accent. Mad About the Boy.
Mad About the Boy.
Yours is better.
Not great. Not my best work. So this is actually based on the book of the same name that came out in 2013. This story is going to follow newly widowed Bridget as she navigates dating as a 51-year-old single mom. Now, of course, there are going to be some crazy hijinks like hooking up with a much younger man. Can't wait to see that. I'm also curious, Danielle, to see how they adapt this story for modern times, because it's been a minute since we had a Bridget Jones installment.
Yeah, and if you remember, I mean, it's forever present on the internet, but there's a lot of parts of this movie that worked 20 years ago that don't feel okay in current day. One of them being, I remember when this came out, everybody was like, I can't believe they put a plus size woman at the front and center of a movie. And it was like, she weighed 136 pounds and was a size 12. So like, none of that works today, thank God. Yeah. But one of the things I love about Bridget Jones and the whole story is that she never lived by a timeline. I think she has a baby at 43. We see her go through life moments so candidly, and sometimes she stumbles, which I love, because especially in that era of film, everything was about women being so perfect, and here she was being so imperfect and so lovable. So I am really excited for this reboot.
I totally agree. And I think what's really cool about this is, number one, we're getting to see a portrayal of a 51-year-old single mom, which we don't get to see that often. But also Renee Zellweger is 54 years old. And we don't often get to see women who are her age in Hollywood getting roles like this because they're so often erased and invisible. So I love this for her. Nobody could have played this role other than Renee. Like, she just embodies this character so beautifully at this point. So I think it'll be fun to see her in the modern world. Like, is she going to have a Tinder account? There's so many ways that this could unfold.
One thing I know for sure is she's going to remain a clumsy, relatable queen.
Yes. And we love a clumsy, relatable queen, don't we?
Yes, we do. As a girl who trips up the stairs all the time, I appreciate clumsiness being portrayed on film.
So maybe one of the things that Bridget Jones is going to do, maybe she'll go to a therapist. Who knows? We'll see.
I would love that. Big fan.
That would be very relatable. And that reminds me of an article that I came across. This is crazy. So AI is now making its way into mental health apps and therapy. We are going to start seeing AI as a part of therapy. I mean, as a huge advocate for therapy, I think any way that we can make it more accessible is great, but I don't know about this. This makes me kind of nervous.
I think there's a lot of pros and cons here. One of the things that does make me nervous, Simone, is that there's a lot of room for error, right? Like, AI therapy and AI in general is only as good as what it's exposed to. And so there's potentially erroneous information via its creator that can come through. There's obviously like privacy and ethical concerns. I think my personal concern is that it's impersonal treatment. Like, how is it actually going to give proper feedback? The bright side I see here is that a lot of times when people, including myself, are in pain, you just want a little connection. And if you don't feel comfortable going to somebody you know, or you don't have somebody at that moment, it's really nice to know that there's just something there to talk to. I just hope that the tech is good enough that the responses back are ethical.
I don't know about this one. I don't think I'm an AI therapy fan. Why does everything have to be technology. Like, can't we just, what's wrong with regular therapy?
Well, actually, they're saying that right now it's best used as a companion to in-person therapy. So your instincts are on the right track. Is this something that you would try out?
Gosh, that's a really good question. I don't know that I would try this out at this point in my life, but I can definitely remember being younger and not having enough money to see a therapist or having to get over that emotional, mental hurdle of like, okay, I need therapy. I need to go see someone. And perhaps AI could help reduce that barrier to entry for a lot of people.
Yeah, I think that's the consensus online too. I feel nervous typing such personal information into a technological anything. It feels like uploading your medical records or something. But I think if you're really in pain and you need some connection, it's not a horrible place to start.
I don't know. I just don't know, folks.
All right. I think our consensus is that we need a little bit more information on this, but we're going to keep an eye on it and we're going to take a quick break. But up next, we'll be back with writer and culture critic Lee Stein on the life and death of the girl boss. Simone, I hear you have a new hosting gig coming up.
You mean besides this podcast?
Yes, this podcast. But also, you're going to be hosting your house on Airbnb?
It's true. I'm going to be traveling a bit coming up, and it felt like the perfect opportunity to earn a little extra cash, baby.
I love your house.
I love my house, too. And it's great for families because it's already set up for traveling with kids. We have bunk beds. We have an extra stroller. We have toys galore. Traveling with kids can be a real challenge, so I'm always looking for ways to make that process easier. When I've stayed at friends' homes or hotels, they don't always have what I need for my family.
That's so true, and you've got it all at your place.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a win-win. I'm not worried about my house sitting empty, and I love that I get to show someone around my neighborhood without having to physically show them around my neighborhood, you know?
While you're out of town for your next adventure, your home could be an Airbnb too. And hey, it might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
The wait is over. The Chi returns May 10th on Paramount Plus, and the stakes have never been higher. Everything changes on the South Side when a new threat comes to power in the Showtime original series from Emmy winner Lena Waithe. Battle lines will be drawn, alliances will shift, and danger lies around every corner, leaving everyone to wonder who they can trust. Visit ParamountPlus.com/TheShot to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. Subscription auto-renews. Restrictions apply.
All right, we're back. And today on the show, we're talking about the rise and the fall of the girl boss.
Oof, this is a big one.
Well, she was born in the mid-2010s. She was simultaneously a power fantasy and a utopian promise.
Ooh, I love that.
I was almost tricked by her. The girl boss was an archetype of a successful woman. She was confident, she was capable, and man, oh man, did she love to work. And then we all discovered that the girl boss could behave just as badly as the boy bosses. And just as quickly as she rose to superstardom, she started to fall.
She crumbled. She crumbled real good. And then as recently as this spring, Sophia Amoruso, who's the founder of Nasty Gal and the person who coined the term girl boss, she agreed it's time to put this phrase to bed.
See you later.
See you later, girl boss. That's exactly what we're doing. So here to help us eulogize the girl boss and forecast the future of work is cultural critic, writer, and according to Vox, the world's foremost authority on the girl boss, Lee Stein. Welcome, Lee.
Thank you.
Okay, today we're talking about the demise of the girl boss. But to really understand her downfall, I think we have to go all the way back to the beginning. Where did the girl boss come from, Lee?
So I think it's important to understand that the girl boss rose in the wake of Sheryl Sandberg's famous self-help book, Lean In. So Sheryl Sandberg is a Gen Xer, and she publishes this book, Lean In, that becomes this blockbuster bestseller that's telling other Gen X women to kind of lean in the corporate workplace so that they can climb the ladder and get to the C-suite. And then the millennial girl boss comes in and she's like, I don't want to climb the ladder. Like, I want to disrupt this whole thing. So someone like Audrey Gelman, who is the founder of The Wing, they come in as disruptors. They're CEOs. And the media starts using this word girl boss to describe them. And the word girl boss comes from another one of these women named Sophia Amoruso, who was the founder of a company called Nasty Gal, which was kind of a fast fashion retailer. And she wrote a memoir called Hashtag Girl Boss. And I think from the beginning, she was using it kind of tongue in cheek, but she coined the term. And then it started being applied to all these millennial, late 20s, early 30 something female founders.
Lee, for anyone out there who doesn't know, can you explain what is The Wing and what is Nasty Gal?
The Wing was a co-working space for women that started in New York City and it ended up spreading to multiple locations throughout the country. But the idea was, if you were a working girl in the city and you needed a place to send an email from your laptop or freshen up for an event that night, you could get a membership at The Wing. Nasty Gal was started by Sophia Amoruso. She started actually selling vintage fashion just on eBay, and her business grew into this fast fashion retailer. Within 6 years, her business was making $100 million, and the New York Times called her the Cinderella of tech.
I'm bringing a lot of baggage to this conversation, Lee. You don't know me, but this is a heavy one for me because the girl boss sank her pretty pink talons into me, and she did not let go for many years. And I'll tell you why. So 2014, that was kind of peak girl boss era. I was in my mid-20s, and it was a year of career first for me. I had gotten my first six-figure job as a journalist. It was my first time living in New York City, my first dream job. And the girl boss, it was more than just a term to me at that time. I was surrounded by other high-achieving, ambitious women. It felt like we were all rising together. Like, so that term, it became this rallying cry. Can you talk about that a little bit more? Because there was this community and movement that really formed around it.
Yeah, so I think girl boss, the movement, became synonymous with millennial hustle culture. It was work around the clock, go for your goals. And I think one of the things that would come to harm the girl boss in the end was that we had the idea that if the girl slash woman was running the company, it would be different than when the boys ran the company. Mm. So we thought, women help each other out. Sisters help sisters. The reason that there's all these toxic workplaces is because none of them are run by women. If we put women in charge, going to work will be like a utopia for everyone. And you looked at the Instagram accounts or the websites of these brands, and this is where the term millennial pink is also starting to come into play. It looks soft. It looks like a velvet couch. It looks like unlimited cappuccinos. It just looks like a feminine utopia. But in fact, as we would come to learn, women can behave badly as much as men can behave badly. And if you have VC funding, your imperative is to scale at any cost, just like the startups founded by men. And so the scaling mentality started to clash with this kind of feminist, well-intentioned intention to do better for girls and women.
Part of what I think makes the concept of girl boss really complicated is that it essentially combined feminism with capitalism.
Absolutely.
What was the danger in combining these two?
Well, I think it set women up to fail because we didn't say to Adam Newman at WeWork, like, Adam Newman, you have to be the president and the founder of this company. But we said to women like Audrey Gelman that her project was not only capitalistic, but her project was also a form of social justice with her goals at The Wing. And so you're exactly right that they combined feminism and capitalism. It was this kind of new experiment. And when I'm looking back in hindsight at The Wing, which fell in 2020, she only had like 3 years to pull it off. I'm glad you used the word complicated because I think we can hold these women accountable for the things they did wrong, but I don't think they're given as many chances and opportunities to fail as the boy bosses get.
There's a quote in your article that I think drives this home. You say, the problem with making girl boss feminism as a part of your brand in order to appeal to customers was that those customers were going to expect you to put your values into practice.
Yeah, and I think there was a lot of criticism of kind of the optics of girl boss feminism. There was a mismatch between what was presented publicly and what was actually happening in these workplaces behind the scenes. A lot of female founders faced criticism for their workplace environments, including Sophia Amoruso herself at Nasty Gal. She was actually sued by several employees who said they were wrongfully terminated for being pregnant, and that lawsuit was settled, and Sophia Amoruso actually stepped down after that. Another thing that I find interesting is how many of these girl bosses fell in 2020 and were kind of publicly disgraced, and they kind of withdrew and scaled back instead of doing what Adam Neumann did and going big on their next move. So Audrey Gelman ended up opening a small shop. Leander Medine Cohen, who ran the brand Man Repeller, she closed Man Repeller and just started a Substack newsletter. So it makes me wonder and think about the future. You know, it's like these women had big, bold ambitions. And where does that ambition go if in the public spotlight, we love you and then we love to hate you?
I want to talk about the future in just a little bit, but before we do that, I want to circle back to kind of the etymology of all this, because I think how we talk about female ambition says a lot about how we think about femininity and power. Why do we think that we need these pop feminist labels for things like female ambition? So do you think that ideas like the girl boss are an effort to sanitize power because it feels like a dirty word for women?
It's such an interesting question. I think it's important to note that Sophia Amoruso does not identify as a feminist. So Sophia Amoruso with girl boss, she's coming out as a capitalist, full stop. And where it gets tricky is when you combine capitalism and feminism. There is this interesting trend that I'm seeing on TikTok now where everything girly is glamorized. So yes. It's like girl walk, girl dinner. And I'm noticing that women, adult women, kind of glamorize or miss girlhood.
Yeah.
And it also makes me think if that's a response to girl boss. If it's like, I don't want to hustle. I want to wear bows in my hair. Like, I want to girl rest.
It really does seem like the rise of girlhood is a response to the harshness of the girl boss era. I mean, so much of the girl boss movement was about suppressing and shaming a certain kind of femininity in order to assimilate into a male-dominated workplace.
I do also want to talk about the etymology. So when things are labeled like man bun or guy liner, it means it's default female. But the girl boss was default male. What do you think that meant?
I think because of women's history, when we think of success and power, we look at men and then we plug a woman in. So we look at male suits in the 80s, mm-hmm. and we give women shoulder pads. Mm-hmm. It's like just switching out one thing for another. And so women can try to learn to act like men. They can learn to act more masculine in a workplace environment, but then they're seen as all these negative stereotypes that they wouldn't want to be. So they're constantly trying to navigate in between these complexities of being powerful but likable, strong but not aggressive. And I think the girl boss slides right in there because these millennial girl bosses were all very beautiful women. They're very photogenic. You could put them on the cover of a magazine. So they aren't threatening in that way. They were likable, pleasing to the eye, but they were also powerful and strong and wealthy and successful. And so it's like they managed to tick every single box for like 5 minutes before we decided that they failed. And then we knocked them off the pedestal.
Okay, Lee, talk to us about the girl boss's downfall. What year did it all start to crumble?
So it was crumbling in 2019 and 2020. There was a big story in Verge at the end of 2019 about Steph Curry and Jen Rubio, who were the founders of Away Luggage. And this expose was about this like toxic work culture, employees working around the clock to get this luggage shipped in time for the holiday. And this caused a huge scandal. Everyone talked about it on the internet. I think it is interesting to like take a step back and contrast that with the work culture at, let's say, like Twitter under Elon Musk. And you can see people saying, oh, Elon, he's such a complicated figure. Just the language that we use to describe male founders compared to the way we describe female founders. Then it got worse in 2020 in the pandemic when we were all at home and we were too online. And to this day, anytime there's news about any of these women, The Cut writes a story about it because for some reason we can't get enough of these stories. What are these women doing now? We're obsessed, as if we just want them to shut up and go away. But is that what we want? We want them to just stop starting businesses? I don't think that sets a good example either.
We do this in pop culture.
Yes.
I've been seeing it a lot with J-Lo recently. Mm-hmm. There was a TikTok of a woman saying, I can't believe she paid $20 million to end her own career. Because people are like, it's too much J-Lo. She's putting too much out there. Go away. And I'm thinking, we don't say that about any male celebrity.
We all work in a competitive industry. We work in the media industry. I work in book publishing. We're looking at our peers. We're looking at our friends. We're seeing who got what. We're ambitious women. We're driven. And so not everyone can win every prize. And so I think watching these women fall, there's almost like a thrill in it. To me, it becomes almost like a spectator sport,
totally.
Especially the summer of 2020. This was like our sports game that we were watching on the internet.
I mean, I think in the most simple terms, it's just misogyny. It's just the fact that there are a lot of people still today who feel like women don't deserve to be in any of these positions. And so they are so eager to see them removed from them.
To Lee's point, I think women do it to other women also.
That's true.
That's what I
think. It's totally true. But that's internalized misogyny. Yeah. I mean, we see that so much.
I don't think it's internal. I wouldn't define it that way myself. I think men know how to be physically aggressive with one another. A man can meet another guy outside the bar and beat his nose in. Women know how to be socially aggressive with one another, and women know how to destroy each other's reputations and damage each other socially. They know how to hurt someone's feelings. And so this kind of pile on with the girl bosses, I think it's really women doing it to each other.
So do you think that that is innate behavior, or is that something that women have learned from observing men in the workplace?
No, I think women are socialized to do it to one another.
Okay.
Because they're competing for the one guy, you know, to be reductive and simple about it. But I think women learn how to do this at school. I mean, they learn how to be cliquish.
Yeah. So, Lee, I want to talk about where do we go from here in this post-girl boss world? Like I mentioned, the girl boss made me feel like I was a part of something. And I think there are other millennial women who feel that way, too. So is there a new community that offers that today?
I was thinking about this, and I'm glad you asked about the word community, because I was looking to kind of compare and contrast a younger founder with the millennial girl boss. And I found this artifact from 2014 when Emily Weiss launched Glossier, the blog post that she wrote. She said, "We're laying the foundation for a beauty movement, one that celebrates real girls in real life." It has this very like aspirational empowerment tone to it. And then I compared this with the description of Hailey Bieber's beauty brand, Rode. And so she says, "Rode is dedicated to making products based in science and great formulation, simplifying many of the mysteries and complex narratives behind efficacious skincare." It's so clinical and cold. Like, it sounds scientific, it sounds smart, but it's not saying, like, girls, we're all in this together. It's saying, like, do you want an effective product that works? That's why you should buy my brand. So I'm not seeing the same kind of, like, we're doing it for the sisterhood kind of branding that was so popular among the millennial girl bosses. Another example that we could talk about is Emma Chamberlain. I think of like Emma Chamberlain as kind of a Gen Z superstar and an entrepreneur, and she started Chamberlain Coffee, but it's still all her brand. Like, she's not coming in and saying, "I'm going to disrupt Starbucks." She's just saying, "Here's my own coffee brand because I care about coffee," and her face is all over it. So I'm wondering if Gen Z is really going to be more about the personal brand and less Yes. about scaling and disrupting the way millennials were.
That's an interesting point.
Yeah.
Because there is this part of girl boss that is the opposition. It's the disruption. And so I do agree with you. I think that the personal brand is more interesting than saying, I'm going to do this totally different.
I think that aligns with what we're hearing about younger generations, that they have declining trust in institutions and they're more likely to trust a personal brand.
I think that's such a smart point. I think we were already feeling this kind of distrust in institutions. Like, we had distrust in politicians. But around the girl boss era, it was like, well, maybe we could trust this company that's trying to do things differently. Maybe we could put our trust in Everlane.
Right.
Maybe Everlane will save us. But maybe the younger generation is saying, maybe I can only trust this personal brand who I think I know. I think I know Emma Chamberlain because I watch her on YouTube. I feel like I know her. They're in a personal parasocial relationship with each creator or entrepreneur.
I think that girl boss walked so that we could run. I do feel a type of sort of disgust, if I'm being honest, with the girl boss movement. And yet I'm so grateful to it because I do feel like they open doors for people like Emma Chamberlain or an everyday entrepreneur, regardless of how big or small your company is, to do it in a way that's not so grand and performative.
Something I learned is that it's always easier to criticize than it is to build something. So it's very easy to go on social media and knock someone down and criticize what they've done. It takes a lot more energy and hope and strength to create or build. And so just to build on what you said, Danielle, like creating or building, it doesn't have to be at scale. It can start small. But I think the women that continue to launch, create, try, run experiments. That's what gets me excited. That's what I try to do in my own work. It's just like keep creating and keep building.
The girl boss may be dead, but feminine ambition is still alive and well. So according to McKinsey, women are actually more ambitious now than before the pandemic. Quote, 9 in 10 women ages 30 and under want to be promoted to the next level, and 3 in 4 aspire to become senior leaders. So maybe we've held on to some of that ambition from the girl boss era.
I think we have.
It's still so new. Like female leadership in corporate America, we've only been doing it like the last 40, 50 years. Like there's so much further that we can go. We just need more time to try it.
Lee, this has been really insightful having you here. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I'm always happy to talk about the girl boss.
Lee Stein is a writer and cultural critic. For more from the brilliant mind of Lee, check out her novels, Self Care and Land of Enchantment.
We're taking a quick break, and then The Bright Side continues our celebration of life for the dearly departed girl boss. Simone, I hear you have a new hosting gig coming up.
You mean besides this podcast?
Yes, this podcast. But also, you're going to be hosting your house on Airbnb?
It's true. I'm going to be traveling a bit coming up, and it felt like the perfect opportunity to earn a little extra cash, baby.
I love your house.
I love my house, too. And it's great for families because it's already set up for traveling with kids. We have bunk beds. We have an extra stroller. We have toys galore. Traveling with kids can be a real challenge, so I'm always looking for ways to make that process easier. When I've stayed at friends' homes or hotels, they don't always have what I need for my family.
That's so true, and you've got it all at your place.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a win-win. I'm not worried about my house sitting empty, and I love that I get to show someone around my neighborhood without having to physically show them around my neighborhood, you know?
While you're out of town for your next adventure, your home could be an Airbnb, too. And hey, it might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
The wait is over. The Chi returns May 10th on Paramount Plus, and the stakes have never been higher. Everything changes on the South Side when a new threat comes to power in the Showtime original series from Emmy winner Lena Waithe. Battle lines will be drawn, alliances will shift, and danger lies around every corner, leaving everyone to wonder who they can trust. Visit ParamountPlus.com/TheShot to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. Subscription auto-renews. Restrictions apply.
Before we close out the show, we both have a few parting words that we'd like to share about the girl boss. Our eulogies, if you will. Danielle, would you like to go first?
I'll start. Hello, all. I'm Danielle Robay, and while I didn't know the girl boss all that well, mostly because I'm a sleepy girl who was never willing to forgo rest hours for a powder pink anything, as a millennial woman, I felt like I should say a few words. The girl boss was the epitome of empowerment, the queen of hustle, the CEO of her own destiny, but she wasn't just sipping coffee for fuel. She was gulping down tears of her interns and calling it motivation. As we bid farewell to the era of hashtag girl boss, We reflect on the highs and lows of a movement that empowered women to lean in, speak up, and hustle hard, all while wearing killer heels, doing power poses, and conquering the world one inspirational quote at a time. As we lay her to rest, so too dies hashtags in general, but specifically ones like hashtag boss babe, hashtag hustle, hashtag women in business, and hashtag team no sleep. We bid adieu to the perfectly curated Instagram feed with perfectly curated influencers showcasing their hashtag blessed lives that made avocado toast seem like a path to financial freedom.
Ooh.
We say farewell to entrepreneurial women in pink power suits on the cover of magazines who preach a set of values they aren't living by. People who mistook self-interest for moral righteousness, casting the pursuit of profit as feminism and the consumption of $175 face oil made from unicorn tears as self-care. But alas, just like every great trend, there's more under the surface. Laughing makes it easier to admit that we got played, but we must understand the system that played us and brought us here. After years of feeling underestimated, overlooked, and devalued, it felt like with the rise of the girl boss, our hard work may finally pay off. The implicit promise was that if consumers made these girl bosses successful, it would mean better working conditions for women, and with that, maybe empowerment for all. As Amanda Mull wrote in The Atlantic in 2020, maybe people could vote for equality by buying a particular set of luggage or joining a particular co-working space. But unfortunately, the patriarchal system that inspired the girl boss wasn't going anywhere because the movement was never about changing power, just wielding it. Even the term girl boss has internalized sexism. The idea of calling a grown woman, a CEO, a leader, a girl, infantilizes her, makes her words more palatable and less feisty. We wanted it to be easy to buck the whole system. But when it turned out that buying certain products or propping up certain female CEOs just wasn't going to upend it all, who did we blame? Women in charge. As it turns out, women can't upend an entire system alone. We need help from men. And that was a hard pill to swallow for everyone. So while the concept of girl boss did, I think, fail us, it did something great. She emboldened us to assert power, speak frankly, embrace drive. The energy and desire for something better still exists. So let's pour one out. Here's to the girl boss. May she rest in peace. Or reincarnate into leadership we can all be proud of, a lifestyle we can maintain, and into a woman, not a girl.
Danielle, that was beautiful.
Thank you for the snaps.
Wow.
Simone, would you like to take the podium?
Yeah, I'm ready. It's time. She believed she could, so she did. Dearly beloved, that's how I'll remember the girl boss. Passion, perseverance, and personality all rolled into one pretty millennial pink package. It's hard to believe this day is finally here. My name is Simone Boyce. The departed and I had a complex relationship. She probably wouldn't remember me, but I remember the day we met like it was yesterday. The year was 2014. I was 26, wide-eyed, hungry, impressionable. Manhattan called and I answered. A big girl job in the big city. But it wasn't enough to get the dream job in the real world. No. I needed a cutesy hashtag to punctuate my humble brags in the digital world. And that's how the girl boss hustled her way into my heart. Shout out to all the girl bosses who achieve the impossible every day. Tag a fellow hashtag girl boss, I declared shamelessly in February of 2016. See, the girl boss made ambition feel accessible, at least for me. I couldn't tell you what a KPI, CPC, or ROA was, but I was fluent in hustle quotes. I daydreamed of boy bosses literally shaking with fear as the pantsuit clad departed wafted through the boardroom. She was our queen bee, and every driven young woman with a dream found belonging in her hive. Her influence extended all the way from the glass ceiling to the shiny linoleum floor of Hobby Lobby, where her goddess-breathed words became works of art. Quote, she turned her can'ts into cans and her dreams into plans. Quote, I'm not bossy, I'm the boss. She got mad hustle and a dope soul. Chills. The girl boss was the wind beneath my millennial wings, until she wasn't. I girl bossed all the way to the top of my field, only to experience more long hours, more lonely nights in hotel rooms, more missed birthday parties. It turns out shattering the glass ceiling wasn't as grand as the girl boss said it would be. More like a death by a thousand cuts.
Whew.
That became crystal clear once I graduated from girl boss to girl birther. After producing two heirs in 2 years, it was time to head back on the road as a correspondent, dutifully tote a microphone and live out of a suitcase again. Only this time I had two hearts beating outside of my body, and I couldn't bring them with me. And in that moment, as my own heart was breaking, I did something I never thought I'd do. I went against everything the departed ever taught me. I just quit. I could hear the girl boss's toxic narrative in my head. We hustled for nothing? Whatever happened to rise and grind? Well, I guess you're going to have to archive all those staged photos of you holding a Starbucks cup in one hand and a briefcase in the other. And thus, the most transformative promotion of my career was complete. The one where the student becomes the teacher. My final act of girl bossery? Silencing the very voice that had trained me all those years ago. Because the more success I gained, the more I realized I already had everything I needed. You know that saying, leap and the net will appear? Well, I'm a leaper, and I have to thank the girl boss for dyeing the net pink and making the jump a little less intimidating. She's probably enjoying a glass of Bella Poke Brut with the other fallen angels, negotiating a merger between heaven and purgatory as we speak. May her relentless grind always remind us the joy is in the journey, not the destination.
That was so beautiful, Simone.
I feel closure. I feel like a weight has been lifted off my chest. How about you, Danielle?
I really think she would have loved to hear your words.
I think she would have loved yours too, especially the part about drinking intern tears.
I guess this means we're saying goodbye.
We're done.
Goodbye to the girl boss.
Goodbye, girl boss. Good riddance. Goodbye.
Adios. Sayonara. See you later. Well, now that we've laid her to rest, tomorrow is anew, and we are talking about how to add a pop of color to our lives. Here with us is Courtney Quinn, aka Color Me Courtney.
Listen and follow The Bright Side on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can find me, your girl, Simone Boyce, on Instagram and TikTok.
And I'm Danielle Robay, at Danielle Robay on Instagram and TikTok. That's R-O-B-A-Y.
See you tomorrow. Keep looking on the bright side, y'all.
Simone, you may not know this, but I have been bitten by the travel bug. This time of year, I crave the outdoors and the mountains and adventure. They're calling to me.
I mean, we were both in Austin recently for work and also having a time. And as soon as I got home, I was already on Airbnb planning my next trip, possibly this summer. And while I'm away, I'll be hosting my home on Airbnb.
While you're out of town for your next adventure, your home could be an Airbnb too. And hey, it might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org.
That's trinityschool.org.